Hi, I'm Chris Pendleton, Bing Maps Technical Evangelist for Microsoft Corporation. And with me today is Pasquale DeMaio, Bing Maps Program Manager.
Yes, thanks for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. So today we want to break down StreetSide. It's a major feature as a part of the Bing Maps experience as well as the platform. So we want to talk about how we created it, what went into it, what kind of effort, all the technology behind it. And that's what we're going to focus on today, and that's why we have Pasquale, who's an expert.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So why don't we get right to it? We're starting off when you're seeing a little bit of our synth view, what we like to call bird's eye. And I'm going to show you an entry into Street View here. And one of the really interesting things is, you know, we're really trying to build a model of the world that's true in 3D and meaningful. And when I click on this, you'll see a nice transition directly from this real imagery of the of actually Pike's Place here in Seattle. And as you enter, you see we transition directly into this human scale, or as we like to call it, street side view. And now we're right here in the public market. You can see people walking around and whatnot. And I think the one of the things you talked about was, what is some of the technology here? Obviously, we have imagery that we're showing of the world. And this imagery was taken on a movable van that mm-hmm. drives around the streets. Yep. And we have a very powerful camera system on top of it that takes pictures in all directions.
Right.
Then we like to take this imagery back to our labs. And we actually literally take them and blend them together. And we build what we call a cube map. And there's a lot of different shapes you can make something, a cylinder. We could do things in a geodesic dome. The cube is the most efficient for displaying it in silver light.
Ah, it's right there. Let me stop you right there. So we did have a 3D control that was a DirectX control. It was accessed through the web. And we did switch over to Silverlight. So when we talk about, you know, the two, a lot of questions come up about our 3D control and, you know, what are the differences. So let's talk about the benefits that Silverlight brings to the table. We had this 3D control. We did a lot of photogrammetrics with the UltraCam, which came through an acquisition of the Vexcel Corporation in Boulder. And that UltraCam system provides a lot of technology to us to benefit us and push us forth in 3D. So what we did with the photogrammetric processing for 3D was we recreated the world and from the sky, and it gave an immersive experience, but we had some challenges with the adoption of the control and some of the technology there. But we were able to create nearly 300 cities around the world in this, you know, this 3D experience. So now we talk about Silverlight as a platform for our group, and you want to talk about the benefits of switching over to Silverlight?
Sure. We love the power of Silverlight. We also really enjoyed building the 3D control. The interesting thing, and we certainly didn't throw away the technology from 3D, we use it here in the Silverlight control as well. But with Silverlight, we felt we could get a very powerful platform without having to have an install for end users when they wanted to use our maps, and still maintain that sort of powerful, much better than Ajax experience that we can give here. And so when we did this, we sort of thought, you know, what are the tools that are out there that can best fulfill the need to want to zoom in and out on maps, wanting to enter into this human scale thing? And Silverlight just shined above all else.
Right, and you say install, because it was a managed control that had to be installed on the computer, and then it was accessed through a plugin. Now Silverlight still requires a plugin, but the adoption of Silverlight is far greater than, you know, a custom control coming from the Bing Maps team.
Exactly, and also once you install Silverlight for any reason, you have it, and you never have to make the install again. So if you install it because of, you know, the awesome Olympics coverage we did, or some of the other cool things we've done in the past,
Netflix,
a great example, then you already have it. You never see an install from us at all. It just loads the maps automatically, and you enjoy them.
Right. So when we talk about 3D, I know there's some 3D aspects to Silverlight 3. We're talking about Silverlight 3 because our control is built on Silverlight 3.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the advantage of where Silverlight 3 provides us some of this depth within the interface, and then, you know, moving on to Silverlight 4 and how we're supported there.
Yes, yeah, Silverlight 3 was the first release that we've done. Our first release was based on Silverlight 3, as you said. And we actually do have a full 3D world in this, what looks like possibly a 2D picture as you stand here. As you move around here, if you watch carefully, you'll actually see he's following the ground, the little platform that our little friend here, his name's actually Eugene, our little platform here. As he moves up onto the wall here, you can see it actually changes based on what we're looking at here. And it's kind of a neat thing because you really are seeing a 3D world here. And if we move around, you can really see it because the transitions will actually leverage the fact that it's a 3D world. and they'll appear much more realistic. And what this does, it lets you keep that context of what you were looking at. If you, you know, could do a transition where you just blur everything out and then everything pops in at the end, but what happens there is you lose context of what you were doing, what you were looking at. This allows people to really see what they're doing and where they're going.
So as you're on the ground, we've got that circle to identify that, yeah, you know, we've got a flat surface here, and then you went up the side of the wall there, and we got some form of a geometry. What's actually happening there? How do we get that into Silverlight 3? What's happening there?
So we talked a little bit before about that camera that is on top of the van. There's also some other technology on top of the van, and one of the key pieces, aside from lots of things for finding location, like GPS and accelerometers, is also actually a laser system, and we fire those lasers off the walls of the buildings and everything else we drive by, and we use that to reconstruct that 3D world. Wow. And as you said right here, you can see we have the 3D here. We're looking at a wall. If I click right now on this wall, we'll automatically go down there and turn and look at the wall you clicked on, because we know it's there. It's not just imagery. It's actually a real world. Mm-hmm. And moving forward, we'll keep taking more and more advantage of this 3D world, adding in more and more elements of the world to make this the most realistic experience you can possibly have.
Yeah. And how high fidelity are these geometries within Silverlight? I mean, obviously to get this level of performance, we've had to, you know, simplify it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. What we do is we start with a very, very complex depth map. Literally every pixel on the screen has a depth associated with it, how far it is away from where the camera was when it was taken to where it is in the real world. When you do that, you get a very large piece of imagery, essentially the same size as a normal piece of imagery. And for our uses, there's a couple reasons why that's not optimal. The first one is it's a lot to download, and you don't want to download any more than you have to anytime you're using a web client. Yeah. And secondly, it also tends to have a lot of noise in it, because you wouldn't want to, as you drag along him along here and you see the edges of these things, it's not helpful to see every little dent in the window there. It actually can be more confusing, especially if you have something like a streetlight or a car in the road, and you just wanted to move down the road. Those things actually can get in the way.
Yeah.
And so by simplifying this, we call it simplified geometry, it makes it much more efficient to download and actually a better user experience.
Now the camera system will catch, well, it sounds like that camera system will capture that level of intricacy for the depths of the window panes and whatnot, but we just kind of extract it out and don't use it.
Yes, it's an important part of the process when we create all that imagery. I talked about the cube maps, that we create these simplified geometries at the same time.
Okay. Now, what do the cube maps actually look like?
If you allow me, I can actually transfer this over to viewing the simplified geometry on the screen. We're right here at 100 in Virginia, but when I turn this on, you can actually see that these buildings aren't just buildings, but they actually have this 3D geometry behind them.
Right.
And so looking at this as I move him around, you can now see he still reflects that same geometry, but now you're actually seeing the geometry, not just the facades of the buildings.
Right, right. So we can actually see street side without the textures.
Exactly.
Nice. And what is that? So let's talk about that process. So we're talking about lasers, right? We're talking about all this LiDAR information that we're collecting, and we're also taking photos. So that was sort of the process, what we did with our 3D control, right? But it was from the sky. But now we're at ground level, so we've got this, you know, human scale factor of walking or driving down the street. Let's talk about how those two come together. So, you know, what is that hinging piece that brings together these simplified geometries with the actual textures of the buildings? Like, is it GPS? Is it, you know, just the photos themselves? Is that kind of what's the secret sauce behind StreetSide? Like, let's talk about that.
Sure. So when we first get the imagery back, it's obviously just a bunch of series of photographs, just like you would take with any camera. And as I mentioned, we stitch them together, and they come back. Actually, we have six cameras on the top of our van, and we stitch them into basically a hexagon, but we align everything perfectly so it lines up just right. And at the same time, we then use that, we take the depth map we created from the lasers, and we also then line that up. Then what we do is we reproject them onto that cube to make them both smaller and more efficient to display to the user. And then that actually, the imagery is still perfectly aligned. And when you're standing perfectly still here, or even just moving like this, we're just actually showing a cube, but we're giving the user the feedback here as if the cube had all of these complex 3D things projected onto it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we move, we're going to project all those cube maps onto the 3D geometry so we can get those cool transitions.
Yeah.
So this is something that allows us to have the actual walls slide by you as you move and move into place again.
Yeah, you can see the geometry like rip apart.
Exactly.
Out of the screen.
And we do a couple tricks to try and make that look better. We do a couple passes with the geometry so that you see an overlay of both sets of geometries with imagery on them, and that helps blend them together. And then, of course, you mentioned some things. You see them rip apart, and that's accurate. And literally, you can see holes through the geometry as the parallax of the images moves across each other. And one of the things we do to make that a little better is we try and make the background behind them close to what we guess the colors might be. So we have a gradient back there that starts at a kind of a dark gray that looks like concrete or tarmac on the ground where you drive a car, and then as the gradient moves up, it becomes blue, and the hope is that we drove on a sunny day, which isn't always the case in Seattle. Sometimes it is, but
it's a myth. Don't reveal the secret. It's just a myth.
And then you get that blend across the two, and then that helps hide it. But you'll see it here every time we move. There'll be a little bit.
I see.
And that is something that we obviously we'd like to make go away. But when we showed it to people, it was actually really surprising how much they liked it, because they kind of felt it had a certain Star Wars or science fiction feel to it.
There's a geeky feel to it, you know, like part of the computation process.
And one of the things people, I think, really value in anything that we do is knowing kind of that it is real.
Yeah.
And that really lets you know the imagery is real and we're not doing some weird trick to try and fool you with it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. We want to keep this stuff as accurate as possible to the real world all the time.
Got it.
So one cool feature is to find out what's nearby in your street side imagery. And so I click this little What's Nearby button here, and it tells us where all these things are actually in the world. And you can see they're all actually pressed up against the geometry where they would be in the real world.
And we've had this for a while. We've had this feature from the beginning, but it looks like we've changed the icons a little bit.
Yep, we've done a couple things here. One of them is you can actually see this is a Dahlia Lounge, and if you've been to Seattle, you may have and been lucky. You may have gone in there to have a drink or to eat. But it's one of my favorite places in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And we show that this actually has a bar inside by looking at the icon. And also the names right here, you can see the signs are right over here on the side of the building. And this is the real deal.
That's actually where it is, a semi-augmented reality experience, right?
Exactly. And this is the start, really, of making it more and more useful for people to be able to really get the feel of what it's like to be in a neighborhood or to really enjoy being able to explore a city they've never been to.
Yeah. And this is a great feature to point out because, you know, the way that we look at maps has changed dramatically over the years, right? When you look at our road maps and you switch to our hybrids and now we got bird's eye and all the way down to human scale, these are just canvases for us, right? We still are able to annotate all of these the same way that we do the road maps for years. So when you're pulling up all these points, they're spatially referenced within the grid of, you know, the viewport of the map. So Pasquale, if you don't mind, let's look at some other data layers that we have on Bing Maps today. We'll go to the map apps.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We'll pull up, let's pull up the Twitter maps, for example. Let's just take a look at that. And so the concept with the Twitter maps that we showed before in previous videos was that people are tweeting with geolocation turned on, and we're able to see where those tweets are coming from. So they could be about other, businesses and whatnot, but the key factor is that the street side interface still provides spatially referenceable context because it's just a map for us, right? Like you said earlier, it's just not a picture. It's
really a map. It's a reference of the real world.
Right.
So exactly. So I've turned off the What's Nearby so we can see the Twitter stuff as clearly as possible on the map here. And as we look around, here's some right now. So let me, this is someone's Twitter right here, and I can see it right here, but what if I want to go inside and take a look at it? Let's go down and see what this person actually was when they tweeted this.
And that transition down has a geometric effect as well.
Yes, exactly. Because we're looking at that 45-degree angle, we can really see the geometry of the images, with our naked eye.
Yeah.
And as we come in, it shows how much of that actually is part of the real world. And I think it's funny because you always think when you're working on this stuff, I know we were working on it, you start off and you're kind of nervous when you start on a project like this. You make set really big goals and you really want to get in there and do something really cool.
Right.
And you don't know until you get about 70 or 80% of the way done if it's going to really work.
Yeah.
And so when we first started to see the geometry coming together, there was just so much excitement on the team because we had been working so hard on it for so long. And when it happened, we were just like, yeah, this actually works. I feel like I'm there. I can see these movements happening.
Right, right. That's great. So we've got this point data right in here, and we've stayed in Silverlight the whole time, right? We're not in an AJAX interface and then switching over to Silverlight and then over to, you know, some other technology. We're in Silverlight the whole time, and this provides a pretty powerful platform for us to innovate as well.
100% true, and it allows us to do these great animations that just make things come alive and feel a lot more smooth and a lot more interesting.
Yeah. So let's back up for just a minute. Take me through the process. Driving down the street, we capture imagery, mm-hmm. we fire off the lasers, we capture all that data. Give me, you know, the five steps or 10 steps, whatever it takes to get to right here.
Sure. I'll give it to you. I'll give you the boring detailed version of it, but it's exciting to me and my team, and hopefully a few of the people watching will enjoy it.
That's the point.
You'll start with those six cameras. All that information comes in, and it's fed into a PC on the van that is actually capturing this to a hard drive. Yeah. The vans drive around all day. They make these routes. We try to film between 10 and 2 in the afternoon so we get the best light. We don't want a lot of shadows. We also want, you know, to have everything sort of shown in its best experience for the end user to see it. It means it takes a little longer to drive the cities because you can't get a full 9-to-5 day in, but it's worth it. We pull all those hard drives back out, and then they are all recorded to a much bigger set of hard drives and then transmitted back to our data center. Most of this processing actually happens in our Boulder lab, as you mentioned before. Yep. And in the Boulder lab, then once again, we pull everything out into a giant mass of what we call bubbles, these sets of all these different images, and then we start just turning the crank on them. And we do a couple different things as we do that. We mentioned the stitching, but we also go through and we actually identify people's faces, cars, and license plates, and we try to remove anything that would be personally identifiable. We don't want to give anybody who doesn't want to be known, we don't want to interfere with their privacy.
Right.
And so we work really hard to make sure that we are limiting all those sort of things. And then that information gets stored, and we use that to then alter the images so you can't see it. The imagery then is put into these giant things we call stitch files. Now, stitch files are just huge sort of layers of imagery that goes one image after another after another after another.
It's a massive amount of data.
It is. And each of these things is shaped, as we said, in a cube. So you have six sides to the cube. And so essentially they're a string of six images. The very smallest one we package into six images all connected together. So you could literally take this thing, print it out, and fold it up into a cube the way you would origami or something.
Yeah.
The bigger ones, because the size of the image makes more sense to load them separately, we actually have each cube's face as a separate one, and we make a call for each one as we need it. And we have multiple sizes of these so that we can then bring in a smooth experience as you're moving. And even in some cases, we don't bring down the largest one unless you zoom in and you really want to see something up close. And that's how we can have that best performance experience.
Yeah.
So after these things are all stitched, they become one giant file. And on the server, this thing is a huge, I think some of the files are hundreds of megs in size.
Wow.
And then we basically, when the client calls for them, the server is smart enough to slice these back up into small pieces of data and download just the right ones.
Got it.
And so that way we have a somewhat, I won't call it complex, but a very well-known and somewhat interesting way of calling in and out of a giant matrix to find each individual image we need.
Right.
And then once we have all those backed down on the client, we put them back together again just like they were when you saw them in the first place. And then bam, you've got an image.
Cool. And now we're annotating this map. This is our data that we're pulling in from a number of different places.
Mm-hmm.
With the map applications, we're doing some mash-in technology, right? So we're pulling services from around the web right in. We also leverage this in our platform. So for developers who want to build applications that use our street-side imagery, they can do that as well. They download DLLs, they install them into their applications, and bam, they can have this kind of experience on their own applications now as well.
Yes, we've done a lot of work to enable a development platform because we think it's really important that people bring stuff into the platform. I mean, we can build cool things, we love doing it, but we can only come up with so many interesting things to do.
Yeah. So you get that, we finally get ground level, so what's next? Are we going inside, are we going underground? What do you think? What's next on the horizon without revealing any sensitive information?
I think we're two things. We want to cover as much of the world as possible, and we'll keep pushing the envelope on what pieces of the world we can show you here. We also want to make it so people can bring other information into it. And you may have seen Blaze's big demo at TED this year, at the TED Talks, where he showcased some of our technology around actually having real user video embedded into the world.
Yep.
I can show you just a little bit here on our first step towards that, which was the street-side photos. And this is a really fun feature. And this we could never have done if we didn't have this really accurate 3D model of the world. So I'm going to click on this this photo. I'm not sure who took this picture.
Yeah,
so, and it's flying me over to where this photo was taken.
Yep.
And we're seeing a real user's photo up there.
Yep.
This was a photo that they chose to share on Flickr, and they gave the rights to use the photo.
Yep.
To, you know, they set the public licenses to make it so that we could use it. And we're very respectful of those people's rights, but the people who choose to share them, we want to give them the opportunity to really showcase it in its natural environment.
Yeah, so we did this for three cities initially, Seattle, San Francisco, and Vancouver. And the process for Vancouver was pretty amazing as well, right? We were,
yes.
We were capturing, allowing people to send photos to us, and then every day processing those photos, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was very, it was a very cool thing to see people. It's some people actually taking photos just intentionally to get them in there, and it was awesome because you had that up to the minute experience while the games were going on up there, and you could really see what was happening. The other thing that was really cool about that was that we had all those brand new photos. There was also a ton of archaeological or historical photos that were out there that were shared, and we worked with some folks in the Vancouver government up there to make sure we could use those, and we put those up on as well, so you could go see Vancouver 100 years ago.
Nice.
Which is really cool, and like it's fun to see like the people in even in horse-drawn buggies or you know the period piece cars and stuff like that, and it was just it's always fun to sort of see what you know these little pieces of history and then what's there, buildings that have been torn down or rebuilt or fixed or made bigger.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And you mentioned that it has to be, thankfully, our geometries were very accurate. So talk about how that played into getting these overlays.
Well, we want to know, we really want to be able to match up the facades and the different things in the picture. And here you have a great example of it, where quite literally the Cinerama sign there on the bottom, on the left bottom of the screen, you can see where the person who took this image actually, you can see how aligned that is. It's really amazing. And what we do is we use a series of processes that both involve the geometry and also the matching of the patterns in the imagery to figure these out. Now, we like to start, if we know where the image was taken, it makes it a lot easier because we can sort of get a hint to where to start comparing things to. And then once we know that, then we can extrapolate out and sort of literally match it to the very best place where we took a picture.
So it's best to get some sort of location context rather than just Earth.
Yeah, we really want people, when they put their stuff up on Flickr, for example, or something like that, or we try to pull these things in, we really want to make sure they have a lat long that's at least somewhat accurate so we can find them and make use of them. And that's something that once it's done, it can transfer to any technology in the future that uses the stuff as well. So if we build new things in the future, they can also pull in those same lat longs, and we can do the same kind of work. And you talked before, you hinted at it. We have plans to do this for any place we can to make things more real for the user, whether it be indoors, outdoors.
Just keep growing.
Yes.
Great. This is awesome. Is there anything else you wanted to share?
No, I think this is a great little snippet of the type of stuff we're doing. I think there'll be lots more surprises in the coming months, and I can't wait to come back and talk to you about those.
Yeah, awesome. We will be here to update everybody on those advancements. So, Pasquale, I appreciate you coming out.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you for taking the time to watch. Again, I'm Chris Pendleton, Pasquale DeMaio. See you soon.